First off, any questions from last week? Or just from anything at all in general?
No.
Nothing? Okay, well, you'll always have the chance. I try to, because you know sometimes in Sunday school it's a little awkward if you be like, so the church just published these news essays on like Joseph Smith, Mary, and lots of.
I saw that today actually.
Yeah, New York Times article.
Yeah.
And what's that all about? You can ask that here. Here, I'm not going to be like.
Oh my gosh. If anything, I'll be like, why aren't you asking about this? What's wrong with you?
So it's always safe. Remember, philosophy major. I probably asked before you did. So nothing at all? Not even New York Times?
I mean, I read a lot about it.
That.
So
what? I didn't even hear about it.
Oh, we can. I'd be cool.
All right, go for it.
Oh, I have to talk about it? Okay. Pretty much the church published some like essays talking about like how Joseph Smith like practiced polygamy, and then there was like a New York Times article about
it.
And they, like, made it. Okay.
Did you think Joseph Smith practiced polygamy?
I didn't know he did.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
Pause.
And so yeah, there's like a New York Times article about it, and. That was what I read. I didn't read the actual essays because I don't know where they are. But
and they're really
cool. Yeah. But there's, I'm like on a Facebook group that's like called the Awesome Mormon Secret Society of Awesomeness. And it's like teenagers and young adults that are Mormons.
So
that's where I saw it on. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you could. I doubt that they're very selective about who joins.
Okay.
But yeah, so I. There's just like a bunch of comments like talking about it, and they said that like when since they were like trying to like restore the whole church, like that's polygamy is part of that, and like a lot of people weren't like super comfortable with that, but like since it was close to the Civil War and a lot of women, their like wives had died, Joseph Smith ended up like getting sealed to a lot of women so that they could have like the blessings of like a temple marriage, even though he didn't like have sexual relationships with them.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I, for whatever reason, I don't know why it wasn't just taught, you know, from primary on
right.
up that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy. I mean, for me, I want the guy saying, "You all have to do this." I want him to be the first one who has to do it. At least that's me. It seems very hypocritical when you say Brigham, Heber, the rest
right,
of the bunch,
yeah.
You're going to practice polygamy, but me, I'm exempt.
Mm-hmm.
That always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And then once I kind of, you know, started asking more questions, and granted, I grew up with a religion professor for a dad, so it was a very ready resource to go to. It's like, oh yeah, of course. That sat better with me than you all have to do this, but I don't have to. And I think my teachers, again, it's just what happens from when we have a bunch of volunteers. I mean, they're not historians.
Right.
Could the church have published all of that in the manuals and whatnot? Sure, they are now.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent seminary teacher manuals that have come out, it's all in there.
Cool.
But, yeah, so, I don't know. How far down that rabbit hole do you want to go? Cass?
I don't care.
You don't care. It's just like, whatever. You can talk about whatever you want.
It interests me.
It does interest you?
Yeah.
All right. So, as early as... So, church gets restored in 1830. And then, I'm just going to put mid-1830s. Joseph Smith is working on the Joseph Smith translation of the Bible. He gets to the stories of King David and King Solomon and their many wives. Sorry, back up. He gets to Abraham and his many wives, and Jacob and his many wives, and he sees what's up with this. And so in section 132, which wasn't actually put in the Doctrine and Covenants until much later, he starts asking questions like, what's up with this? Come on. And if you want to read the answer, you can go to section 132 and see what the Lord says. But as early as that, mid-1830s, we start to have Joseph receives intimations of this, you know, as a restoration of all things, this polygamous relationships are going to be brought back. And so mid-1830s, he takes a plural wife. He does so on the down low, doesn't tell Emma. Now me, I would be like, you gotta tell your wife.
Yeah.
Otherwise it just looks really, really bad. You know? On the other side, if the Lord came to me and said, you need to go marry this other girl, and doesn't explicitly tell me, like, and tell your wife about it, I might just be like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so yeah. In a way, you know, that restoration story is much like the Old Testament story where we have some prophets who are asked to do some very, very difficult things. And we kind of have this privileged vantage point of looking back on it and kind of sticking our noses in the air and saying, oh, silly Joseph, or silly Abraham, or why didn't you just do it this way, you know?
Right.
I don't know all the intricacies of what's going on, but anyway, failed experiment, he quickly abandons that, doesn't really talk about polygamy again until they get to Nauvoo in the 1840s, and then he starts practicing again. Emma's not quite on board, but she's not kept all the way in the dark. Mm-hmm. She can never really get fully on board with it. It's just something, granted, right?
Yeah.
Come on. But she does have, her soul is calmed for a while, and she realizes what's going on. Joseph starts introducing it to some other people. There's a really tender story about Heber C. Kimball, who eventually will become Brigham Young's first counselor in the first presidency, and his wife, Vilate, V-I-L-A-T-E. It might be Violet, but everybody I've heard says pronounce it Vilate. And these two were just sweethearts. I did a research project where I read a bunch of their letters back and forth from when he was a missionary in England.
Mm-hmm.
And just cute, I mean. Like old person cute though. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, do you ever see husbands and wives like post up to each other on Facebook? It's just like totally adorkable. That's a technical term. Adorkable. Joseph comes to the Kimballs one night and he says, Heber, the Lord has revealed to me that I'm supposed to take Vilate as one of my plural wives. How would you feel if you're Heber? You want to kick the guy in the shins and get a little higher, right? Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But having a testimony that, yes, this is the prophet, he works on it, and Vilate keeps coming. She's like, Heber, what's going on? What's going on? And he's just like, it's okay. I'm just working through some things. And so she, you know, being the tender-hearted wife that she is, she just prays for him over and over and over. And finally, in a vision or a dream, the Lord comes to her, and she has a vision of herself in heaven with Heber and another woman, and the understanding just comes to her, and she realizes this is okay. And so she goes to her husband, and she says, Heber, the Lord has made it known to me what the prophet has asked. It's okay. And so they go over to Joseph's house, just tears.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on the door. Joseph comes. Heber takes his wife's hand, puts it in his, and says, Joseph, we're willing to do whatever the Lord asks. And then Joseph breaks down and he's like, it was all a test. There's no reason for you to give me your wife. And very shortly thereafter, they went to the upper room of the Red Brick Store, and Heber and Vilate were two of the first individuals ever to participate in the sealing ordinance to be sealed for all time and eternity.
That's cool.
I mean, so yeah, it has a happy ending. Could I say every story ends up that way? No, there were some hurt feelings and whatnot, but that's probably the most, one of the more well-known stories.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, it comes out of Life of Heber C. Kimball that was written by his grandson, Orson F. Whitney. If you want the reference, I can look it up and get it to you. So yeah, there's lots of stuff. I mean, it still makes me uncomfortable, which I think is a good thing.
Right. Well, do you watch the show The Sister Wives?
I have ever seen the show Sister
Wives.
Okay,
well, they went to my school, and like I was really good friends with them.
Uh-huh.
And they're like considered Mormon, but polygamy, right?
Yeah.
So like.
So how does that all work?
Yeah.
So Mormon, in the case, in the historical sense, that they believe in Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon.
Gotcha.
And so it would say, all. How can I say this? All members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are Mormon,
mm-hmm.
but not all Mormons are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So they're not members of our church,
right,
by virtue of them practicing polygamy, which would exclude them from church membership, but they can still believe in Joseph,
gotcha,
and the
okay.
book and
Makes sense.
They just think when Wilford Woodruff says no more polygamy, they think that was a mistake. And so that's really
part ways.
So, I mean, if you're interested in it, those essays, you go to lds.org, you click on gospel topics, it's up near the top, and then, like, early Kirtland polygamy or something like that, it's all there. And if you ever have questions, please, don't be like, oh, I'm going to embarrass the chubby guy. It's okay, I've been doing this a while, I've had a lot of students ask a lot of questions. So, anything else? Cool. Well, if you do, please. It doesn't even have to be on topic. If it's important to you, it's important to me. So tonight we're going to be looking at what's going on here? Law of Moses. Okay. So you can grab your phones and open up to. Actually, don't do that yet. I'll set you up. Law of Moses. Oops. Question for you.
The two of us.
With all two of you. No, we won't actually do this. Okay. We can just talk about it. Does God's law change? Because the Lord is the same yesterday, today, and forever.
Right.
But we don't live the law of Moses today, which was God's law.
Well, it was fulfilled. I don't know if that counts as it being changed.
Okay. Do you still offer sacrifices?
No.
Do you?
Well, not animal sacrifices.
Okay. So you'd say maybe the law of sacrifice, in its broad sense, doesn't change.
Right.
But maybe
specifics.
The specifics of it.
Yeah.
Might. Can you think of anything else like that? Something that may have been done biblically, but today it's not something expected of us to do.
I mean, like, a bunch of stuff in the Old Testament, like not being able to wear clothes with like two different types of fabrics and like just like little stuff like that we don't have to follow.
Right, now if we were going to live the Bible literally, we'd be breaking all types of commandments.
Right, yeah.
We probably be breaking the commandment
stuff
right now. Because one guy, two girls, you know?
Right.
I mean, we're in a public place.
Yeah.
So, name of propriety, we're okay. By today's standards.
Yeah.
But back in the day, we may have been stoned after this. Probably not me, but for sure you guys. You know what I mean?
Right,
let's
yeah
be real. It was a little harsh toward women.
Yeah.
And non-believers. Mm-hmm. And yikes. Is that all God saying, be harsh toward women? Is that his law? Well, that's what we're going to try to figure out tonight and discuss. Is there anything in the church now that would be analogous to maybe Law of Moses laws that perhaps in 10 years we won't be living? Who knows? Who knows? Okay. Bible Dictionary entry for Law of Moses. Kate, can you read that for us?
Yeah.
And while Kate reads, Cassie, I want you to look for words that tells us or that indicates the Law of Moses isn't eternal, but it's going to change. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The name assigned to the whole collection of written laws given through Moses to the house of Israel as a replacement of the higher law that they had failed to obey. The Law of Moses consisted of many ceremonies, rituals, and symbols to remind the people frequently of their duties and responsibilities. It included a law of carnal commandments and performances added to the basic laws of the gospel. Faith, repentance, baptism in water, and remission of sins were part of the law, as were also the Ten Commandments. Although inferior to the fullness of the gospel, there were many provisions in the Law of Moses of high ethical and moral value that were equal to the divine laws of any dispensation. The law of carnal commandments and much of the ceremonial law were fulfilled at the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. The law functioned under the Aaronic priesthood and was a preparatory gospel to bring its adherence to Christ.
Okay. Any words in there, Cass, that pop out like, no, this is not the way it always has to be, but this thing can change?
Replacement of a higher law?
Yeah. So that's one. So there's a replacement, right? If there's some kind of replacement, you've got to be, you got an okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it's replaceable, it's not eternal, right? Right. Kate, anything stick out to you?
It says it's inferior to the fullness of the gospel.
Right, so if we have a gradation of some sort, again.
Provisions?
Yeah, exactly. I just picked out a few. You picked better ones than I did. but yeah, you can see, I think this is something that going into it the Lord intended is going to be changed.
Yeah.
Now, in your lifetime, your entire 8 months of church membership or whatever it is, have you seen any changes in the church?
Missionary age is lower.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What if I was a person who was wholly convinced that the church is true because young men go at age 19? And then all of a sudden that gets...
Yeah.
I know, why would somebody be converted to that? But maybe, you know, sociologically they looked at something and they're like, you know, more young men die at the age 19 than, you know, just car accidents and alcohol abuse or whatever. And so, I mean, it is... You know, they get up there on Sunday and they just start crying. It's like, I know the age 19 is the perfect... Somebody somewhere has probably said that. So
yeah.
I got to be careful. But when that's changed, I mean, it's kind of like pulling the rug out from underneath that person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Think of anything a little more substantial than missionary age that may have changed. This isn't guess what's on my mind.
Right, yeah.
One cast, 8 months. You probably don't know what has
Shoot.
Changed, right? Well, how about this one?
What?
Anything in your life that has changed, something that used to be okay and now is not, or something that is now okay that used
just
to not be
modest
okay.
Clothing.
Okay. How has that transition been?
Well,
I'm sure you were a total insert... descriptive word here.
I mean, I wore bikinis, and obviously, like, now I wear tankinis, like, tank tops, and, like, spaghetti shop shirts, but, I mean...
And your life is ruined now?
No.
And so, if you were to see a good, quote-unquote, member of the church who did wear those things that you gave up, is that okay?
Well, I mean, it's not okay, but, I mean, I accept it, because maybe they're just haven't grasped that concept and don't feel like they should. But it doesn't change my views, and it's not going to make me go back to my old ways, so. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Anything, Kate, that comes to mind?
I mean, I don't know, because I've been a member my whole life, so. I guess, like, going to college, it's actually, like, choosing to do the things now that I, like, still have done my whole life. Like, I still dress modestly because it's, like...
Mom and Dad aren't there.
And right, and it's, like, there's so many opportunities to, like, drink and do drugs, but I, like, have no desire whatsoever to do any of that.
You haven't tried acid yet?
No, I haven't. Nor do I want to. So it's like,
but I think you've probably seen that a lot of people, when they do get away from home, I mean, they're converted to maintaining the status quo, you know, with parents and not getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But once that relationship is removed, then, well, I'm going to drink and I'm going to party and I'm going to do drugs because,
mm-hmm.
Hey. And what we do is when we see shifts either in life circumstance or relationships or whatnot, we really start to figure out what is it to what am I really converted, rather than what was I just kind of going through the motions about just to maintain social homeostasis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right word?
Good.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Good. Well, let's go over to Exodus chapter 20, and we'll look at 10 major pillars of the law of Moses. And let's see if there are any of these that you want to get rid of, okay? So, oh, Cass, we should teach you the books of the Bible song.
I don't even remember.
What? Oh, I get to teach both of you.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I used to be the primary song leader. It was the best job in the church. I had those kids they can rattle off the books of the Old Testament, the books of the New Testament, the books of the Book of Mormon, the sections of the Doctrine and the Covenants. That was easy. They just had to count to 38. Well, maybe we'll do that. Maybe we won't. We'll see. Okay? Kate, read for us. Read verses 1 and 2 and see if this sounds familiar.
All right. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage.
And 2. Or was that 2?
That was 2.
Oh, keep going then.
Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
What does that sound like? Keep going.
Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth.
Recognize these yet?
I mean, they're the Ten Commandments.
Yeah,
they're
the Ten Commandments.
Oh, okay, I did.
No, that's fine. So we got the Ten Commandments. That time I was playing Guess What's on My Mind. We got the Ten Commandments. Could you rattle off what the Ten Commandments are without looking? You want me to teach them to you? Super fast?
Yeah. Sure.
This is going to be corny and quick, but at least you can walk out of here tonight saying, like, hey, I learned how to say the Ten Commandments. Okay?
Okay.
So, one and only.
Right.
Shall have no other gods before me. Okay? One and only. 2, rhymes with shoe. Don't worship them, for they are idols. Right, girls?
Yeah.
Okay? 2, shoe. Idols? Got it? Okay? So dumb. Just go with it. 3, tree. Trees have leaves. Leaves have veins. Don't take the name of the Lord thy God in
vain.
Get it? Okay.
Okay.
So, 1. You tell me what
no
is
other
it?
Gods.
No other gods. 2.
No idols.
3.
Don't take the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah. 3. Tree. Trees
have
leaves.
Okay,
these
have
veins. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. 4. Door. Well, here's the church. Here's the steeple. Open the door. Here's all the
people.
Do you know that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Where are you going? To church on
Sunday.
Keep the
Sabbath.
Holy. Got it?
Okay.
Okay. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm bad at memorization.
It's okay. You'll actually get these. The cornier it is, the better it works. 5. Alive. Who's responsible for you to be alive? Mom and Dad. You better honor them. Okay? 5. Alive.
Okay.
Honor your father and mother. The days may be long in the land. And if you don't, at least back then, we got to kill you. Okay? 6. Sticks. Sticks and stones can break your bones and they just might even kill you. Don't kill. Okay? 6 sticks. 7-11, don't commit adultery.
What?
It doesn't make any sense. Just go with it, okay? 8. Jailmate. Why are you in jail? Because you stole a bunch of stuff. Or you can trim the 8 sideways and look like handcuffs. You're in jail.
Because
you steal, you stole stuff. Thou shalt not steal. 9. Line. Lying. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Like, it's like lying. 9. You gotta stretch it a bit. Or you can turn this outside and look like Pinocchio with a long nose.
True.
Also
yes.
Good, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So 9. Line. And then 10, you know, you just add a T on there. Tent, tents cover things, and we're not supposed to covet. Cover, covet. Okay? Think you can do it? Okay, go for it. You do the first 5. Cash, you got the second, the last 5.
Okay. No other gods. No false idols. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Keep the Sabbath day. Honor your mother and father.
Sticks. Shoot.
Can break your bones, they might even.
Kill. Don't kill.
Okay.
7-11.
This one has nothing to do with anything. Don't commit adultery at 7-11.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't
Jailing.
Steal. Don't lie. And don't covet.
Very good. Okay, we got it. That wasn't too hard, was it? Okay, so those are the 10. Now, can you see, oops, I went too far. Do you see any of these 10 commandments that you would say, no, those don't apply today? That's just an old one. We don't really have to worry about that anymore.
No.
Yeah, and I think that's why they've withstood the test of time, is those are things that are true everywhere all the time. Wait. Can you think of any time where the Lord told someone to break that commandment?
Nephi,
go kill Laban. Israel, go kill the Canaanites. Right? Can you think of any place where the Lord told someone to lie?
Abraham.
Yeah, Abraham, your sister, say that she's your sister, not your wife. Can you think of a time when someone was told not to keep the Sabbath day holy? Jesus and his apostles, they're walking through a cornfield, and they pick ears of corn. The Sadducees and Pharisees come and are like, hey, you can't do that. And Jesus says, well, it's the Sabbath was made for man and not for man for the Sabbath. And so oftentimes what we see is sometimes we take these and we create our own expectations for what that means.
Yeah.
And there are these cultural constructs that start to develop around eternal truths. Okay? We're going to be talking about that more and more and more and more. Now sometimes equate the law of Moses with this statement. Law of Moses is all about eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for a hand, and foot for a foot. It's this law of commandments that's very, very tit for tat, quid pro quo, very, you've got to do this, and you've got to do this, but don't do this, and blah, 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 blah. Turn over to Moses chapter 21, and let's take a look at the context for this specific verse and see if we can figure out what is the eternal truth that the Lord may be trying to point Israel toward.
Exodus 21 or Moses 21?
Oh, did I say Moses?
Yeah.
I meant Exodus.
Okay.
Where Moses is, Exodus is all about Moses. Come on, see what I mean, not what I say.
Wait, quick question.
Yes.
Is this on your website?
It can be.
Oh. Or did you, no.
You want me to put it there?
No, it's okay.
I can email it to you.
I just wasn't sure.
Well, I don't usually put the PowerPoints up there. This recording will be.
Oh, okay.
If you really want to email me, and I'll shoot you the link, okay? So, Exodus chapter 21, looking at verse 24. Now, you see it there, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for a hand, foot for a foot. Now, any time when you're reading through the Bible, some other translations of the Bible are easier to understand. Not just because they update the language, but they tell you like what the different kind of stories or different sections are. And then sometimes they'll even like offset them by paragraphs. Mm-hmm. Now in our Bible, do you see those little, they almost look like paragraph symbols?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have those in the electronic one?
Yep.
Okay, that's the symbol for pericope. Stick that in your Jewish collection. But it means a new section or a new story, or these verses all go together. So whenever you get to come across a problematic Old Testament verse, look for the pericope symbol, start there, and then start reading so that you can get the context for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Cass, are you read for us?
Yeah.
Go up to verse 22 so we can figure out what's going on.
If men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished according as the woman's husband will lay upon him. And he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And if a man smite the eye of his servant or the eye of his maid, that it perish, he shall let him go for his eye's sake. And if he smite out his manservant's tooth or his maid's servant's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake.
All right, thank you. That's fine enough. So we have all of this, like, okay, if two guys are fighting and they bump into a pregnant woman and she miscarries, then what's it say here? That's what it says, like, her fruit depart from her, so there's a miscarriage, mm-hmm. and yet no mischief follow, meaning the woman doesn't die, then they're just supposed to figure out some sense of consideration to give to the woman who's lost the child and to her husband. So there's going to be some judgment there of some sort. However, if the women are, or the men are, I love that, if they're striving, what does that even look like? If they're striving and they hit this woman who's pregnant and she dies, then what happens?
Then the other guy dies.
Yeah, then we kill everybody. Mm-hmm. Seems a little harsh, also here. Right? And so we have, you know, laws like that that just seem like, whoa, hold it, Moses.
Yeah.
Really? That seems a little, was it an accident? Or what's going on here? But then look down in verse 26. A lot of people want to point to the Old Testament and say, like, it allows for, like, mistreating women. Well, except for that whole verse there. I'd say that's pretty protective of women, right?
Right.
Verse 26, you know, is talking about slavery. Now, I would never promote slavery. But if you look at it, if I were to live in the old world and were a slave, I would want to be a slave to the Israelites. Because they had very strict laws on how slaves were supposed to be treated. I mean, when you and I think slavery, we probably think American slavery, mm-hmm. where you can do whatever you want to your slaves because they're your property. Here, let's say if a slave owner smites the eye of his servant or the eye of his maid that it perish, meaning the eye goes bad, he shall let him go for his eye's sake. I don't think we saw much of that in American slavery.
No.
And if all of these, you know, good Southern claiming Christian plantation owners would have adhered to the same code, it would have been much better for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about the law of Moses, there are a couple of things. True, there are some eternal truths, like the Ten Commandments, that are taught and are true for everyone all the time, everywhere. And those would be the more spiritual laws. But we also have, in this case, you know, there are some civil laws that are just to maintain Israel as a group of people. Because remember, they've left Egypt. They have to receive some reprogramming for a bit. They're going to wander around in the wilderness for a good 40 years. And they just have to be taught how to live civilly one with another. And so we needed to draw a distinction, and maybe even another line around here, where we have these civil laws or principles that these people are supposed to live by. So, we don't live this law today. If I cause someone to have a miscarriage, yeah, that's a sad thing, but Bishop Haglund, my bishop, isn't going to come up to me and be like, okay, you gotta pay that woman, pay her husband now. I mean, I would feel horrible. And just, hopefully out of the goodness of my heart, I would try to do something to make amends of some sort. But if I were to accidentally kill a pregnant woman, I mean, yeah, I'd probably go to court and whatnot. But especially here in Illinois, I have people who die for it. But what greater or grander eternal truth do you think we could distill from this, you know, watch out for pregnant ladies and treat your slaves good? What would be an eternal truth, a larger, more spiritual truth that is true for everyone all of the time, that these things might be trying to point Israel toward?
To not kill.
Okay, thou shalt not kill, except if you're Nephi or you have Canaanites living next door, right? Okay, so thou shalt not kill. Is there a greater, I mean, why? Why not kill?
Because it's bad.
Okay. I think there's something about obedience going on here, right? That if God tells us something, then we have to obey that. How about this one? All humans everywhere are the spiritual offspring of heavenly parents. Is that true for everyone, everywhere, all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Say yes and a no. Are you, who is not a heavenly daughter or son of God?
Oh.
Hitler? Saddam Hussein, Pol Pot, name your favorite dictator, right?
They still are, though.
Yeah.
They still are? No, they're spawned of Satan.
No.
But do you get what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
Maybe this, you know, this grand eternal truth, there's something about the eternal family there. And you're going to find a lot of these eternal truths revolve around this family aspect or this respect for life. And so what we find is eternal truths are pointed to by these things, but usually what happens, at least it does for Israel, is their civil laws and their principles, they start to obscure and get in the way of teaching these eternal truths, and Jacob chapter 4 happens. So jump over to Jacob chapter 4. Sorry, that's Book of Mormon, Cass.
Oh.
Where you can borrow mine. Oratia. I'm gonna win. Jacob chapter 4.
I got it.
I got there.
What? Are you kidding?
No.
You're good. Got it?
Yeah.
Sheesh. All right, Jacob chapter 4, verse 14. You want to mark this one. That's a good one. Will you read it for us, Kate?
Mm-hmm. But behold, the Jews were a stiff-necked people, and they despised the words of plainness, and killed the prophets, and sought for things that they could not understand. Wherefore, because of their blindness, which blindness came by looking beyond the mark, they must needs fall. For God hath taken away his plainness from them, and delivered unto them many things which they cannot understand, because they desired it. And because they desired it, God hath done it, that they may stumble.
Awesome. So these civil laws, or these principles, were meant to reveal to them these eternal truths, but they look beyond the mark, and they end up seeing these other things where the civil laws become more important than the eternal truths.
Mm-hmm.
Or the applications of how you're supposed to live a law becomes more important than the eternal law itself. So here's the grand question. And it's embarrassing, but for us to all think, in my religious observation of God's laws, what am I getting wrong? What eternal truth might I be missing because I am just so, no, I have to do it this way. Can I tell you about one of mine?
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in a Mormon home where music was a big deal, a really big deal. And the kind of music that you listened to was a big deal. And I, while living at my mom and dad's house, like never bought a CD or a cassette tape. Those existed. What was the last time you used a cassette tape?
We had a like cassette player in our car for a while. So on like road trips we listened to
it. So every once in a while.
Yeah.
We ever used a cassette tape?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so alright, so I don't feel too old. You know, I had never bought one that had a single cuss word in it, because it was just like, no, that did not enter our house. So one time, it was Thanksgiving break, actually. I had gone down to where my grandparents and my cousins lived, and my cousins invited me to go out spotlighting with them. Now, spotlighting, for those of you who have not lived in rural areas, is where you get a bunch of guys and girls into a really big truck and you go out into the wilderness somewhere and you get a big spotlight and you look for deer.
Why?
It's like 7-Eleven adultery. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay.
But that's what they invited me, and I'm like, wait.
The weird things they do.
What? I mean, because here I am living in the metropolis of Utah County, you know, big city. And so I'm like, oh, well, sure, I'll go. And so we go and pick up my cousin's girlfriend. I don't know if she was a girlfriend, but they were very familiar with each other. So. They went and go pick up another girl that my other cousin knew really well, and they go pick up a third girl who comes and sits back by me, which is a little awkward. And we go around and look for deer, and we listen to music that I thought was very inappropriate. And we go through the night, and eventually, you know, we drop the girls off, and it was just awkward. I mean, there was some kissing going on, and I wasn't about to kiss this stranger. My cousins are looking at me like, and after the girls were gone, I just lit into my cousins. I'm like, you guys are horrible, bad people. You listen to bad music, you're doing bad things with girls, just blah, 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 blah. I was just going after them. And my cousin, he said, so what, you think you're like somehow better than us? And I was like, yeah. I'm better than you. I don't listen to bad music. I'm not doing these things with girls. I'm wasting my time spotlighting. Who was the bigger sinner that night? Them or me? Thanks, Cass. It was easy. They were doing bad things. I was just judging them for it.
That's still bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But so often we do want to point the finger and we want to say, well, hey, I'm not drinking, I'm not smoking, I'm not partying around, but I can sure judge people that do.
Mm-hmm.
And I can point the finger and I can feel morally superior to those people. Which, maybe like the Jews, you know, looking beyond the mark, thinking the end all and be all is not partying and not smoking and not doing drugs. No, the end all and be all is, like we talked about yesterday, coming to the great I Am. I don't think Jesus kept commandments just to keep commandments, but he understood what the eternal truths were, and that's why, even to the religious establishment of his time, he knew what the Sabbath day was. And so when they're going about healing on the Sabbath day, and maybe picking corn on the Sabbath day and whatever, he knew, no, I'm keeping the higher law, the eternal truth behind keep the Sabbath day holy. You guys don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, I just wonder, you know, were Jesus to come observe contemporary Christianity, would he be pleased, or would he see, like, no, you guys are off base? I don't know. I really don't know, but it's an interesting question to ponder. Jump back to Exodus. There are a lot of bizarre laws, and some are great ideas, some are not so great ideas. And again, a lot of people like to point to some of the not so great ideas and say, look, if that's the God that you believe in, I don't want to believe in that God.
Mm-hmm.
And my response would be, well, some of these things are civil. He's not declaring it is an eternal truth that women always get treated in this particular way.
Right.
Or that when you conquer another nation, that you enslave the women and children, or marry them, or whatever. Okay? We have to realize, you know, different types of things, different laws are revealed to different people at different times for particular circumstances. And I'm very thankful we don't have to live a lot of those today. Jump over to chapter 23. Okay? Okay, chapter 23, verse 1.
Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness.
Okay, let's unpack that one. Don't raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. What do you think he's getting at there?
The footnote says slander.
Okay.
So it's like not lying.
So never lie anytime.
Well,
never be deceitful. That'd be a pretty good law to live by. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we can't think of the few exceptions, you know, Abraham and some different things.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally get behind that one. I don't really. Well, how about this? My wife comes to me and she says, "Jake, does this dress make me look bad?"
Make yourself believe it.
Just make yourself believe it. Lie to myself so I don't lie to her. Well, first of all, my wife never looks fat in a dress. But what if someone asks you something and you know the truth is really in her?
I know this is gonna hurt, but this is the truth.
Yeah, that would be kind of.
Let's keep going. See if it helps us with any of these other verses. Keep going, verse 2. Okay.
Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to rest judgment.
Okay, you know, be guilty of herd mentality. Verse 3. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. Hold on, what is that talking about? Okay, Joseph Smith translation. A wicked man. Don't support a wicked man in his cause.
Mm.
Okay? We just had Illinois state elections. Or no, we won't talk about that. If thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him again. If thou see the ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden and wouldst forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help with him. I mean, this is sounding like New Testament Jesus, right? I mean, I thought this Old Testament God was supposed to be like all thunder and lightning and fire from heaven, and if you don't believe in me, like, off with your head. This is sounding pretty good. Verse 7, keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and the righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. Thou shalt take no gift, for the gift bindeth the wise and perverteth the words of the righteous. Also, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye knew the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. It goes on and on and on, and when we actually read what's in the Bible, yeah, we could point to a few verses that just make us, like, kind of recoil and be like, hold on, that God is crazy. But the majority of them are actually pretty decent laws to live by. Now, out of all of the laws that were produced during this time, this Mosaic law is the only one to withstand the test of time, where we have people still abiding, by and large, by these norms. Now, does the Bible have a monopoly on truth and goodness? No, not at all. And those that would want to argue we don't need the Bible to teach us morality, yeah. I mean, people in and of themselves, they have this inner conscience that points us toward a lot of good and right things. But what happens, we being social animals, you get enough of us together, weird stuff happens. And so again, we need these civil laws to point us, hopefully, toward these more spiritual laws. And sometimes these things are going to change. Okay? Now, I'm going to shift gears just a bit. So, in establishing, helping us figure out what are eternal laws, Elder Bednar of the Quorum of the Twelve, he's written some great stuff on this lately, where he makes distinctions between doctrines, principles, and applications. Okay? I'll give you a church phenomenon. You tell me. I know we haven't defined these yet, so we'll just see what you do with it. I'll give you a church phenomenon. You tell me if that's an eternal truth, a doctrine, if that is a truth packaged for application, or that is a specific application of one of these two. Okay? Visiting teaching.
Application.
Okay, defend your argument.
I don't know. Maybe principle.
Okay.
No.
Well, tell me why you. Why did you start here, and then why did you bump it back to this one?
I don't know. I can't like word what I'm thinking of. Like
English is best.
Yeah. Yes.
Or German.
I don't know German, okay. So I'll stick with English. I mean, visiting teaching isn't like a commandment, but it's like, you know, for like helping others, and it's like a specific thing that we do.
Okay. Alright, so.
No, I don't know which one it would be.
Cass, are you happy putting visiting teaching down here? You want to put it anywhere else?
Maybe a principle.
Yeah,
okay, why?
She said, like, it's helping others.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we could put helping others.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good idea all the time, right?
Yeah.
And then a specific example of that would be kind of the institutionalized visiting teaching. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, if we're doing visiting teaching right, it looks more like this than just, I'm calling you this month because I'm supposed to.
Yeah.
Okay, don't die by. Right? Yeah. All right, Cass, how about this one? Tithing.
Doctrine.
Okay. Why? Well, mine right up there. Yeah, we'll discuss it first.
Because.
So if it's a doctrine, it's got to be true for everyone all the time, everywhere.
Oh, well, not everybody does it. Is that what?
Should they?
I think so.
Okay, well, anyway, what are you thinking? Why would you say tithing is a doctrine?
Well, because our church asks us to, and I think that we receive many blessings from it.
Okay.
And I like benefits our church.
Okay.
It's out of the goodness of our heart, and it's not like an obligation. I mean, like, it shouldn't be like a chore, like you have to do it, and I don't see it like that way.
Okay.
So.
All right, so maybe for you, you're saying for you, tithing is a doctrine because of all those reasons you gave.
Right.
You know, so like the doctrine of sacrifice and the doctrine of obedience and the doctrine of, what would we call those, principles. But again, remember, for something to be a doctrine, it has to be true for everyone, everywhere, all
right.
the time. Has the church always been on the earth?
No.
Can we think of times where it would have been impossible for someone to pay tithing? Now, it wouldn't have been impossible for someone to sacrifice for the building of the kingdom,
right.
but institutionalized, fill out the little slip, anything in there, give it to a bishop. You know, I'm thinking of medieval saints who didn't necessarily have a church to pay tithing to, or weren't taught that principle in some way. They may not have been paying tithing, but they were still sacrificing in some other way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm giving you some hard ones to try to help us help us think through this. Because sometimes what really gets us into trouble is we'll hear something in church that maybe even the teacher says, this is a doctrine and it will never change. And then if something changes, then we're in trouble. Okay? Okay, you give me one. Just some church phenomenon. Number seven? No, don't do that one.
What?
Seventh commandment. Seven.
Oh.
Just trying to, you know, reinforce what we already worked on. What time is it, by the way? 23.
Keeping the Sabbath day holy.
Keeping the Sabbath day holy. Good one?
Yeah.
All right. Keeping the Sabbath day holy. I think I would put that one, Sabbath day holy, I think I would put that one right there. And I will argue it this way. There are lots of different ways that someone can keep the Sabbath day holy. But depending on when the Sabbath day is, for example, if you went on study abroad trip to BYU Jerusalem, your Sabbath day would be on Saturday. Because, you know, Jewish Sabbath is on Saturday, Friday night to Saturday night. And so that would change. But I think this principle of obedience to God and keeping a commandment that he's made very clear, I think that one's true for everyone all the time, everywhere. Now, doctors. I'm very grateful. Well, hold on. I don't keep the Sabbath day holy. I work on Sunday. I set up firesides and I speak at different things. Am I guilty of breaking the Sabbath day? Cassie's just so nice. Now, I had to have this conversation with my family because my oldest son, keep the Sabbath day holy, which means don't work. So I put don't work down here. He's like, Dad, you're not supposed to work on Sunday. But you always have to go to... You're not keeping the commandments, Dad! While he's playing video games, right?
Figures.
Yeah, we let them play educational games on the computer on Sunday. We had to have that talk and say, no, Seth, so what does it mean to keep the Sabbath day holy? Why did God ask us to keep the Sabbath day holy? Maybe this will help. Doctrines help us answer the why questions. And when you have yourself or friends or, you know, children that come down the road, not just like orphans. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just the little children.
Our children.
Okay, what is this? Hopefully we can answer or anchor our answers to, well, why do I have to keep the word of wisdom? You may have asked that question when you got baptized. Like, really? Not drinking coffee is going to get me to heaven? I don't think that really has a whole lot to do with it. Obedience, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee? Not so much. But we anchor our answers for why we do things in doctrines. Principles, they tell us, you know, kind of what we are supposed to do. but they don't tell us specifically how we're supposed to do that. Now, what would you say the law of Moses is? Is it primarily anchored here, here, or here? I would say it's probably more down here, because the people, they're not quite ready for this higher law. Now, when Jesus comes back, he says, you know, you have heard it said in olden times that thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, so thou shalt not commit adultery. I mean, that's right? I mean, maybe up here. But he said that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath already committed adultery in his heart. So maybe a principle would be, you know, to keep oneself morally pure, or not harbor those types of feelings in an unrighteous way. I mean, if we were to just say sex is categorically bad, well, goodbye to any future population of the earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people have taken things to that extreme. In Doctrine and Covenants section 49, we have a group of people who are called the Shakers, and they believe some things, and they receive a revelation that some of the elders are supposed to go take to that group and say, hey, look, eating meat is not a bad thing, and sex in and of itself is not inherently evil. Now, there are some evil applications, misapplications of that principle. But again, taking things beyond the mark. Do you have any good beyond the mark stories of people in the church you've seen just kind of like hold on to like some little tidbit of churchness and just be like, this is the end all and be all of religious behavior. This is the best thing ever. Have you seen anything like that yet?
Not really.
Oh, you're lucky. Move to
I mean, like, a lot of people that I know in the church are really, like, judgmental about, like, tattoos and stuff like that. Like, even people that have converted, they're like, well, they should just get it removed, like, immediately. Yeah. But it's, like, not that easy. Like, it's expensive and it's, like, painful.
Right.
And it's, like, I don't know, a lot of time, and, like, stuff like modesty and, like, extra piercings. I think people, like, focus too much on that as opposed to, like, the why, which is, like, you know, like, keeping ourselves, like, our body clean and pure and, like, as a commitment to God, instead of just, like, oh, well, her skirt is, like, 3 inches above her knee, and she's just, that's just a terrible thing. She's the worst person ever, you know, like.
It was the most awkward thing for me as a male teacher during the warm months when a high school senior would walk in wearing a very low-cut top or short shorts or something. And I got good at just kind of just ignoring and turning a blind eye to it, but it was so awkward. And I think that there's maybe been an overemphasis when we talk about modesty in the church to just women's clothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have 3 sons. I also have 2 daughters, but they're not really old enough to figure this out. So I try to teach my sons modesty, and so when my sons will start, you know, telling fart jokes. Also, they're 9 and 7. They're 9, 7 and 6.
I saw your little picture. It's cute.
Which
one? Your family. I think it was like.
Oh, the family picture with my little girl.
It's like a recent one. Yeah.
She's got sass, that one. But yeah, we'll say they'll be making fart jokes, and I'll say, guys, that's not modest. And the first time, my son was like, my shoulders are covered. So that's not what it means. You know, making sure our bodies are covered, or appropriate talk, you know, if we are modest, it helps us better feel the influence of the Spirit. The more I feel the Spirit, the closer I am to God.
Mm-hmm.
See how that works?
Yeah.
But you're right, so often we're just like, well, President Hinckley said, one set of piercings in your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to teach that to my daughters,
right.
And then I will let them decide what they're going to do with it. And if they decide, no, we're doing 2, I'll remind them. And if it's an open act of rebellion, that might make me a little worried, because I can never see when rebellion against God is a good idea.
Yeah.
If there's some misunderstanding or some social pressure to do that or something, I can work with that. As long as it's not like, I hate God, so I'm going to pierce my ears.
That would be kind of weird way to act out.
Really, you know? But I think so oftentimes we just see the symptoms and mm-hmm. we misunderstand what the real issue is. So yeah, thanks for bringing up the modesty one. I think we as a church may have gone a little overboard on that one. Mm. You know, whether or not your shoulders are covered determines if you're a good person.
Right. Yeah.
What did you grow up with? I mean, what did you see, like, were any of your Latter-day Saint friends before you joined the church a little, like, crazy about any certain commandment or not?
A lot of them don't really follow, like, the modest. Like, they wear bikinis and stuff, so. It didn't make them a bad person at all, you know. And, I mean, yeah, they shouldn't do it, but I'm still friends with them, and they're still a good example to me. And
so what do we do with people that don't live the commandments the way you want them to?
I mean, we don't do anything.
Oh, wait, you mean the way you do church might offend somebody else?
I mean, you could say, like, hey, have you thought about, like, what you're doing? But you shouldn't just be like, you're a terrible Mormon and you need to stop or we're never going to be friends again. Like, that's...
Those are some awkward conversations. Right,
yeah.
Especially when somebody comes to you and's like, hey, Cassie, just fill in the blank. You're not doing Mormonness like I want you to.
Right, yeah.
But I'm so thankful for President Uchtdorf, you know, don't judge me because I sin differently than you.
Yeah.
Remember that bumper sticker he mentioned at dinner conference?
Mm-hmm.
And we're all guilty of it to mm-hmm. some extent or another. And usually it's because maybe in our own minds we've elevated some application to doctrinal status. Now don't get me wrong, I think we should teach applications.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to teach my kids, you know, proper dress, proper grooming, proper language, you know, avoid this stuff on the internet, this stuff's okay, these types of movies are all right,
mm-hmm.
don't watch these. I'm going to teach them applications, but if we just leave it at this level, it's just skin deep.
Right.
And we kind of end up like the Israelites in this law of Moses, where it's just, you know, we have to be told every single little thing to do.
Yeah.
Here's Elder Bednar. He's describing the whole thing a lot better.
How can I use the framework of doctrines, principles, and applications
to
something simple? Okay, let's use the framework just to think about home teaching as we begin, okay? So let's ask this question. If home teaching, brethren, is not working in a branch or in a ward, what do we normally do to fix it? Say it real loud.
We switch partners or we...
Yeah, we reorganize it again. Is that a doctrine, a principle, or an application?
Application.
Right. The one I always remember is from when I was a student, and they had this program where you would bake a cake for your home teachers, and the incentive was that if you got there early in the month, the cake really tasted good. And if you got there at the end of the month, it was pretty nasty and moldy. So, what is that? Is that a doctrine, a principle, or an application?
Application.
It's an application. I know an application that will guarantee 100% home teaching in any unit of the church anywhere in the world. You get the biggest, strongest, meanest guy in the branch or in the ward to be the executive secretary. And he just scares the daylights out of everybody about doing their home teaching. And they say things like, if you do not have your home teaching done by the 15th of the month, I'm going to break your face. And so you do your home teaching because you don't want to have your face broken by this guy. Now, as soon as he's released, home teaching is in the tank. Or if he moves away, or something else happens. Now, all of those applications produce short-term results that are not sustained over time. And if you stop and think about your experience, most of the attempts to remedy home teaching are focused on different applications. Now, here's the question. What doctrines, what principles, if understood, would change the behavior of men who do not home teach? What would change their attitudes and behavior? I find this to be really quite simple. We complicate way too many things in living the gospel, or in trying to oversee the programs of the church. I do not think there is one lazy man in the church. who fails to home teach because I just don't want to, I'm too lazy. I don't think they understand the doctrine. Now we have lots of men who know it, but knowing it is not the same as understanding it in the heart. When a man understands what it means to make a covenant with God and has received the oath and covenant of the Melchizedek priesthood, when a man understands the doctrine of home teaching, he'll never miss. You don't have to bother him, you don't have to remind him, you don't have to push him. Therefore, if any of you or any men are not faithful home teachers, it's not because you don't know about it, it's because you probably don't understand it in terms of the witness that comes by the power of the Holy Ghost. Okay? Now, simple question. Don't answer out loud, I just want you to think. If I gave to each of you men a little piece of paper and said, jot down the doctrinal reason for home teaching, and if you can think of some scriptures that go along with it, do that too. Would we get the same answer from all of you, brethren? You all know they'd be terribly different. See, we don't even know the same thing, let alone understand it. Could I just suggest a simple phrase from the scriptures? The purpose of home teaching is to watch over, be with, and strengthen. That's why. What does doctrine answer? The question of why. Why do we do home teaching? To watch over, be with, and strengthen. Now, if a man understands what it means to make a covenant, and he understands that reason for home teaching, he's good to go. Not just know that. It's not enough to give a talk in an elders' quorum about watch over, be with, and strengthen. It's not enough to have a lesson. Each man has to learn that for himself. And when you do, and you have the witness of the Holy Ghost about that purpose for home teaching, nobody ever has to prod you to do it. So you have the plan of happiness, eternal progression, principle of love, the relatedness of watch over, be with, and strengthen, all of which are elements of the plan of happiness and the manifestation of love, reflected in the application of the program of home teaching. So, can you see how you begin to think about stuff? Instead of, okay, here's the challenge, here's what we'll do to fix it. Or let's come up with a nifty idea for this. You go right to the heart of the issue because the answers are always in the doctrine.
So, do God's laws change? Depends on what we're going to call law, right?
Yeah.
If they're up here, no. If they're down here, all the time. Mm-hmm. So, for Strength of Youth pamphlet, did you get one of these when you got baptized? Did they ever talk about the First Strength of Youth pamphlet?
Really?
Oh. So this is just kind of the standards for youth that are outlined. It starts with it clear back in 1965, the most recent one, 2001, and then in 2011 there was an update.
Yeah.
Have you got a little one on you?
I used to. I don't anymore.
Oh, you got Mormon. Come on.
They're like little ones for
all. Well, that's a good thing. You know, application.
Yeah.
Keep the First Strength of Youth pamphlet on you. The principle would be, if I know and can access the Lord's standards, it's easier for me to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
God tells us things, well, God tells us how to live life best, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we've gone through some different iterations of it. This is just so funny, check this out. 1965, under acceptable dancing, no shoulder or hip shaking, avoid crouching. This is like direct quotes from it, okay? Avoid crouching, slumping over, trying to do a backhand, or having too close a body contact. Church standards prohibit dancing that is suggestive or sensual in any way.
Hip shaking.
Yeah, hip shaking. Watch out, right? Cassie, just stop moving backhands. Terrible thing.
Trying to do a backhand.
If you can actually do it, I'll
do it.
Okay, right? Updated 2011. Dancing can be fun and can provide an opportunity to meet new people. However, it too can be misused. When dancing, avoid full body contact with your partner. Do not use positions or moves that are suggestive of sexual or violent behavior or are otherwise inappropriate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen is the church really backing off of the applications of saying it has to be this way and it has to be this way, mm-hmm. and really pulling back to trying to help us live principled and doctrinally based lives. I actually had a friend who went through and he studied all the different iterations of the For Strength of Youth mm-hmm. pamphlet, and he compared the descriptive elements, you know, or the proscriptive elements that were just like, you have to do this and have to do this, versus the more principled elements, and he's seen, I mean, just almost a shift, and that it's much more principle-based and less, like, don't watch rated R movies. Now, you've probably heard that one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Last time, don't watch a rated R movie was mentioned in conference or published in the For Strength of Youth pamphlet. Want to take a step?
I don't know.
The
80s. Oh.
It's forever ago. I mean, that's a pretty good, no, or early 90s. Anyway, it was right around that. It hasn't been for like 20 years. I mean, that's a pretty good standard, right? What about it? There's some R-rated movies that would be worth watching? How about this one? Are there any PG-13 movies that would be inappropriate to watch?
Yeah.
Well, hey, it's PG-13, so it doesn't say R. I'm fine.
Nope.
You get what I mean?
Yeah.
And there may be, and some people, you know, term this Christian liberty, because Jesus comes, he fulfills the law of Moses, and there's this Christian liberty now that they're not asked to live this lower law of outward performances anymore. He replaces it with the principles and the doctrines. And so some people are like, sweet! Well, I was wanting to try bacon. You know, because kosher laws, yeah. You're not even that. However, turn over to, and I think this is a really good principle to keep in mind. Because, I used to have students come to me all the time, Brother Judd, like, is this movie okay, or should I do this? I mean, they were asking me all types of, like...
Where are we turning to?
We're going to go to 1 Corinthians, that's the Bible, New Testament. Yes. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. I think. Maybe a second. I'm pretty sure it's first. Yeah. And so what happens in the New Testament church is a bunch of the Jewish Christians, they think people have to become Jews before they can become Christians. That would be almost like before someone can become a Latter-day Saint, they have to become Catholic before they can become Latter-day Saint. I mean, the analogy breaks down, but that's as close as I can get.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying, no, these people still have to do, like, they can't eat pork, they, you know, have to go through all these rituals and whatnot. And Paul is saying, no, we can just convert them to these things up here, because that's what matters. This stuff, mm-hmm. it's here one millennium and gone the next, and... This is what people need to be converted to. So anyway, 1 Corinthians chapter 8. And instead of using the example of meat, I'm going to say length of ones of Cassie's shorts. Okay?
Okay.
So, chapter 8, verse 8. But the length of Cassie's... The length of Cassie's shorts commendeth her not to God. For neither if she wears them short... is she the better, neither if she wears them long is she the worse. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours, Cassie, becomes a stumbling block to them that are weak. Skip down to verse 13. Wherefore, if wearing my shorts short make my brother to offend, I will not wear my shorts short, while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, caffeine. You heard the whole caffeine controversy in the church? Some people like, no, it's up the devil. Some people like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recent poll that was taken by one of these online Mormon blogs. Did you see it by chance?
Mm-mm.
Did it come on your awesome
no.
Mormons of awesome awesomeness?
No.
it found that at least 40% of their respondents were like, yeah, I drink caffeine every day. 20% were, you know, if it's around. And the rest were either, I don't have a no comment, or no, just don't drink it at all. It looked like the majority of Latter-day Saints are being like, yeah, caffeine, no big deal. I was raised in a house where it's like, you do not drink caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
I consciously drank my first caffeinated beverage when I was 28 years old.
Wow.
It was so liberating. Now, every once in a while, yeah, I will. Yeah, especially when I'm on some of these long trips. If it's late at night, I will. Mm-hmm. I won't just drink it consistently. And probably most importantly, if you were to show up with a huge old Mountain Dew, I wouldn't say anything about it. Mm-hmm. Actually, one time I had a kid show up with coffee to seminary.
Kind of weird.
A little weird, right? And that's like a direct violation of the word wisdom. What do you do?
Nothing.
Wait, well, that's just an application. Applications don't matter, right?
Well, not necessarily.
Right, because some applications come from the prophet.
Yeah.
Pay attention to those ones.
Yeah.
If you could do just as much damage, you know, you show up with a Mountain Dew and like, hey, God said caffeine's of the devil. You can do just as much damage over applying a non-prophetic application as not applying what the prophet has said. Does that make sense at all? And we do, because sometimes we have this very overly judgmental view. And I think we saw that happen with the Israelites and then the Jews and how that all eventually, you know, plays out. Because they're converted to these down here. I've kind of beat this horse dead enough. You get it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The law of Moses was necessary to help point the Jews to the doctrine of who God is and who Jesus Christ is. But they missed the mark. They got so caught up in the don't drink coffee, don't eat bacon, only take so many steps on the Sabbath, that they missed the mark. And the warning for us is we can do the exact same thing. And so let's be firm on the stuff that we do know, and let's be very patient on the stuff that we don't. And if somebody chooses to be a Mormon a little bit different than you, I think that's okay. When we see someone start to wander a bit, I mean, if we're in the position where that relationship is there, we may want to say something. But if someone's applying it just a little bit different than you, let's be a little patient, and let's err on the side of love. And I share that in the name of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Yeah. Questions?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, that's the end of the slideshow. You can't ask any anyway. Okay. Cass, you pray for us?
Yes.